By all hearings?
This would apply to all. Senator Springer, we do have facilities, and we do have regional locations at this time where we are doing the hearings.
I understand that, but if cost is driving this thing, I'm willing to bet I know what the bill's going to be next session, or I know what's going to happen in the next budget. Just so I understand what the bill actually does.
Right.
I don't ask you to predict the future, I may be entirely wrong, but.
Senator Brockman.
Well, just in keeping with that, I didn't know that the 100-mile provision was in there, but we're dealing with people that have had the driving privileges revoked.
Yeah, you do have a 100-mile provision now for what?
I mean.
For which kind of hearings do you have?
Madam Chair, we have the 100-mile provision currently in statute form for implied consent hearings, which are about 60% of the hearings branch business currently, as well as in one statutory authority for vehicle cancellation hearings, where the statute provides that we hold the hearings regionally within 100 miles.
So you have 60, maybe 65, 70% now that are, that you have flexibility?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Section 4 corrects an oversight that occurred when the Motor Vehicles Code was rewritten in 1985. What the section of the bill would do is return language that places the burden upon a driver or owner of a vehicle convicted for driving uninsured to provide the division with proof that they were in compliance with financial responsibility requirements. As the statute is now written, the division must prove the person is not in compliance. So this would be essentially returning it to pre-1985 language. Sections 5 through 7 amend statutes governing the coercive procedures that courts may use when persons either fail to appear or comply on minor traffic offenses. The coercive procedures, rather than the present three-stage process, which includes non-issue, cancellation, and finally suspension, this would result, as proposed, in a single-stage suspension. Currently, what happens is if an individual fails to appear, the court notifies the Motor Vehicles Division at stage one, that is a non-issue, where if the person's license were to expire or they tried to come in and renew it or change it, the division would not perform that. This plan would have the division send notice to the person, giving them 60 days in which to clear the matter back with the court of jurisdiction or face suspension. 60 days would grant sufficient time for the person to avoid the suspension. Currently, an individual is provided full contested case hearings at each of these stages, yet the facts seldom change the need for the person to return to the court and to clear the matter. Our experience with hearings on these issues shows the outcome is not generally changed by the hearing. Frequently, the hearing's a means and provides a contact for an individual to find out what's needed to clear and avoid a suspension or a sanction. The notice by the division would provide that opportunity. The current process also provides some individuals with a way to essentially manipulate the system by requesting hearings and having a suspension action stayed pending the outcome. Section 10 amends ORS 809410. It adds references throughout each of those subsections, allowing for administrative review process rather than contested case or limited hearings. The section ensures that any suspension action not based on a conviction would have a full contested case hearing opportunity. Also in Section 10, there's a deletion there for relating to some unsettled judgments that come from courts when it's filed by the division. Currently, we have situations where payment is agreed on by the debtor and creditor, and a person's license is reinstated. If the debtor defaults, the creditor can direct the division to resuspend, and the debtor is entitled each time this occurs to a hearing. This change will not allow for this multiple suspension process in the associated hearings. The original bill proposed a fee in this section to cover the division's cost, and after a review, we propose that the fee be deleted. The amendments have the fee deleted. Section 11 adds...
Yes, Senator Springer.
I've been trying to listen carefully here and follow your written testimony here, and it seems like
You have a Hannon Gross bill, right, in hand? We've got that same packet as a big Hannon Gross bill.
There's no more Section 9 that's out?
That's correct.
Excellent.
Yes, we need to get
Thank you.
Senator Stringer a hand in those bills.
I've got the amendments on.
Yeah, we have. It came in the packet. We can look at it.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Just, as we say, this bill did get drafted up in Ways and Means.
That's one strike.
I thought you'd like that.
But not three.
Maybe not.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Okay, we're all ready? Got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 11 adds references to the administrative review process rather than contested case hearings for convictions arising from other jurisdictions and identifies that that would be an administrative review on conviction. Section 12 refers to the driver improvement program that the administrative review would likewise be the review process under the program of 809-480 ORS. This section of the Motor Vehicle Code gives the division authority to take action by administrative rule to establish program for improvement of drivers. The law provides for administrative suspension for persons participating in the program when there's violations. This bill clarifies the administrative review and that it applies only to actions stemming from court convictions. If an individual were in this program, for example, and they did receive a conviction for driving under the influence while they are in the driver improvement program, and if that were the violation relied upon, they would be allowed an administrative review rather than a full contested case hearing. It also amends, Section 12 amends ORS 809-640 by making administrative review the standard for review of habitual offender conviction. The Habitual Offender Act provides that after three major convictions or 20 minor moving violation convictions, a person is revoked for 5 years. This would bring that also under the administrative review. Sections 13 and 14, again, they refer to ORS 813-400 and 813-403. They allow for administrative review as the standard for suspensions from a conviction of driving under the influence of intoxicants, or if the individual is involved with a commercial driver's license. Sections 15 through 19 affect vehicle cancellations under Chapter 891, Oregon Laws 1989, commonly referred to as the zebra sticker law. Presently, a person that's subject to a vehicle cancellation can obtain a full contested hearing. Our experience so far is that the petitioner generally appears showing relief has been met by the fact they either no longer own the vehicle or they have reinstated their driving privileges. Essentially, under the zebra sticker law, if an individual is stopped by a police officer and they have been driving and are subject to it by virtue of driving while suspended, the individual at that point has their registration tags are marked and they have 60 days in which, or 30 days in which to clear the matter up. We're finding at hearings presently that individuals who appear generally have met one of the relief conditions. They either have reinstated their underlying driving privileges or they no longer have an ownership in the vehicle. We're finding that really the hearings don't change the outcome short of the person complying with the requirements already there in law. The documents that are relied upon by the division would constitute a prima facie case. The motorist would need to submit evidence to the contrary. Such evidence would be submitted by the petitioner informally without necessarily a hearing. The amendments we've proposed delete several sections of the original bill when this concept was...
I think I have a question. You're moving on beyond Section 17 at this point.
Yes, okay. Through Sections 15 through 19.
I noticed in Section 17, Sub 2, you say the court shall conduct the review of the division's cancellation order without a jury, and review shall be limited to the notice received from law enforcement and the division driver and vehicle records that constitute the basis for the cancellation of the registration. I assume you don't mean that the petitioner can't bring in whatever evidence he has to counter that, do you?
Senator Shoemaker, exactly. That's what the agency would be relying essentially upon to establish a person subject to it. There certainly could be relief at any time the individual is able to demonstrate that there has been error, for example, or
I wonder if we shouldn't
improper.
Make it clear that that review of the division's
of the division's evidence would be limited to these things, but there shouldn't be any constraint upon the petitioner's evidence. I don't quite know how to say that, but I think it's probably just a drafting problem here.
Bill, you listening?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
The issues
resolved
in these things.
Correct. Racing along here. Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, we certainly will take a look at that. From the original draft, we anticipated making further changes to the Habitual Offender Act to streamline the processes, and that's what the balance of the sections related to. After discussion, we've determined that significant changes should not be made to this program at this time. So the remaining sections now delete statutory reference to the coercive procedures steps that were eliminated in sections 5 through 7, and they also change statutes to remit Habitual Offender Act cases to be the scope of administrative review on matters involving habitual offender. Section 28 of the bill makes the bill effective July 1, 1991. And all convictions or court actions taken after that date would fall under the provisions of this bill. An early effective date will maximize the cost savings and efficiencies provided for in the bill. In conclusion, Senate Bill 1212 will continue to allow us to provide the public with an effective means to address their valid issues relating to driving privileges. We also believe it will dissuade people from unnecessarily clogging the hearings process. And the bill will save the division more than $600,000 by eliminating 4 hearings officers and 3 clerical positions. We encourage your favorable consideration of the bill with the proposed amendments submitted by the division.
Thank you. Are there questions? Senator Brockman?
No, I was commenting to a member of the audience out there about how much I really believe that they're really going to fire 7 people.
Well... Actually, I'd be interested in knowing, just 30 seconds, what does it cost you to enforce the driver driving laws in this state? What's your budget to go through all the machinations we go through to deal with drivers and uninsured drivers and illicit drivers and all sorts of other kinds of drivers?
Madam Chair, off the top of my head, I'm going to give you some context and parameters. The division's budget, governor's recommended, and Ways and Means approved budget for the next biennium is around $98 million for the 2-year period. Not all of that is dealing with problem drivers. A lot of that is dealing with licensing of drivers, renewal of driver licenses, processing vehicle registrations and titles. And a variety of things like that. We can certainly get you the figures and break out how much of our budgets across various organizational lines involve dealing with problem drivers. Randy, do you have the figures on what the hearings budget is for that period of time, approximately?
The hearings budget is a little over $5 million for the biennium.
Generally, the hearings budget is typically dealing with reviews of license sanctions that the division has taken, and then conducting the hearings when those sanctions are contested by the person.
And that's what? Did I hear you right? 5?
Madam Chair, correctly, a little over $5 million for the biennium.
Now that isn't the total amount because we spend a lot of other activities involved in either trying to improve drivers, controlling drivers who have had problems, medical programs, issuing restricted licenses for people who have licenses has been suspended for a variety of reasons. So that's a little bit of context. We can pull something together for you.
I'm not sure it's that relevant. I'm just curious. Senator Springer.
Was it in 85 that we took the judges and the judicial proceedings out of these revocations?
Madam Chair, Senator Springer, it was January, I believe, of 84 when it went from a criminal court process for habitual offenders into an administrative sanction.
Okay. So we took the judges and the judicial system out, and we were assured that the hearing would provide adequate due process. And now we're back to say that we got to save money, so we're going to take the hearing away, and we're going to have some kind of paper administrative process as the next step. Yet that's still going to protect due process.
I figure we ought to start backwards. I'm now down to about 35% of the people in my rolling tally of who's even eligible to have a driver's license after those who have non-payment of child support, marijuana violations, any kind of violation. I mean, we are now stripping driver's
licenses. We'll have about 50% of the people operating vehicles don't have a license or insurance.
Right.
That will all be safer. Okay.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Hill.
Did you know any pilot projects with this procedure? Did you test it out?
Madam Chair, Senator Hill, we have not actually tested it out, but I would note that we do what is described in statute as limited hearings at this time, which are pretty much limited to a less scope than a full contested case hearing. This is an attempt in this bill to take addressment of those people who have already gone through an adjudication and have had a conviction occur, and as a result of that, Motor Vehicles Division is required to take an action. We have not done a pilot.
And you feel that all the due process requirements are met through these procedures. Has your counsel from the AG's office cleared that?
Senator Hill, we have had review of the entire proposed bill by legal counsel, by the Department of Justice, and they have assisted us with the review. It's certainly something that we believe, at least, people will have the opportunity to raise those issues of error and issues of where the suspension or action may be inappropriate. That avenue will always be open to them, and in fact, we will have trained staff in the hearings branch. This process will remain as a hearings function within the hearings branch with trained personnel doing the review of the file and record.
Madam Chair, if I could also respond.
Yes, please.
Senator Hill, let me give you one example of what I might refer to as due process. A person is convicted for driving under the influence of intoxicants. They're served a suspension notice in court. They are also served a notice that, in fact, they're going to, after their driver's license is suspended for whatever period of time, depending on the length, the length of time depends on whether this is their first or second conviction for that. They are also required, after their license is reinstated or reinstatable, to file proof of insurance. These are some of the higher risk drivers. So now they're reinstated, and they file what is known as an SR-22 filing. They maintain that filing for a very short period of time. It lapses, the insurance company notifies us. We send out a suspension order. That person is able to file a request for a hearing, staying in imposition of that suspension. They go through, the hearing is finally held, they walk into the hearing, and they bring in that they just filed yesterday a new insurance filing. So there's no suspension. That lapses in a very short period of time, and the whole process repeats itself. They request a hearing. We issue another suspension order. They request another hearing, and it goes on and on and on. That's just one of the examples of a redundant hearing process that, in fact, is set up by some of this, and that some of this is intended to address.
Walk us through, if I may, under this bill, how would that be changed? That process you just described of the failure or notice of cancellation, do you suspend the person immediately?
Senator Springer, upon receiving notice on an individual that's subject to financial responsibility, and we receive notice generally from an insurance carrier that the SR-22 has lapsed, we would in fact send notice out to the individual informing them of that and that we would be suspending them. At that point, they would still have an opportunity to request an administrative review to ensure that we've posted it to the right person, to ensure those procedural safeguards have been there. So it would take it out of the realm of having repeated full contested case hearings only, but there still would be an opportunity for addressment.
The suspension notice, as I understand it, also would not be an immediate suspension. It would go into effect in, I believe, 30 days?
That would be my understanding.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Shoemaker.
Let me just continue to pursue that. And if the administrative hearing resulted in an affirmation of the suspension, then is that the end of the line?
Senator Shoemaker, the suspension would be going into effect and the person would have this review. Presuming that everything is in order, then the suspension would continue until the person meets the requirement and the condition.
Is there any recourse from the administrative review?
Senator Shoemaker, yes. The individual does have the right to take that matter into a circuit court for review. There would be a review outside of the Motor Vehicles Division.
Okay, and that's true of any administrative review?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, that is the process that would be set up for external review.
Okay, are we satisfied with questions in this? We'll leave it set for a day or two and let people sink in since it is a major change. But thank you very much for the details.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, let us then move into work session on from Ingrid, Senate Bill 1142. And I would ask, I guess I need to have approval for the committee with respect to Senate Bill 1054. Well, we're getting ready on 1142. 1054 is the Senator Shoemaker's zero tolerance for the 18 to 21-year-olds. It passed out of the committee on the 6th, and in doing the preparing the final staff measure, Ingrid has discovered an oversight in the bill, the original bill. So we need to ask that the committee reconsider that vote by which we sent it out. Certainly, we don't intend to get in the way of your minority report at all, but we need to fix. Yes, Senator Bunn. So is there objections to reconsidering Senate Bill, Senate Bill 1054 for the purposes of bringing it back and doing it? Technical correction, I think.
So moved.
Thank you. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. We will have that scheduled on the 13th at 5 o'clock. That's Monday. Okay, 1142-3.
We're starting at 5 o'clock on Monday.
Well, no, that's because there's been a visitation arranged with the governor at 7. So the 5 o'clock Ag Committee, I guess, never was going to happen or something. So
no, ma'am. We've been working so well that we've taken a couple nights off next week to let judiciary have a chance.
So we'll have judiciary will meet from 5 to 7 instead of from 7 to 9 on the 13th. Mm-hmm. Just, I guess, that's the worthwhile announcement. Ingrid, on Senate Bill 1142-3, this bill actually we did pass out, and we have technical amendments back here because Ingrid has gone to work. You saw the shape of the bill when we left, and we adopted a couple of conceptual amendments that's dealt with custody, etc. So Ingrid, will you bring us through to the -3 amendments, please? Tell us why.
Yes, Madam Chair, and Paul Snyder's here, too, to answer any additional questions members might have, but basically it does a number of things. First of all, looking at the -3 amendments on page 1, line 4 talks about using human resources rather than general services, so that substitution has been made throughout. On line 13 of page 1 of the -3 amendments, it talks about if the claims exceed the amount in the fund, this would prevent the Department of Human Resources and the State General Fund from being liable for those deficits. And that was a conceptual amendment which was adopted by the committee. On page 2 of the amendments, line 21, this language is new, and it relates to defining the period of time that's being dealt with in the bill and limiting it to the period of time after contact by the police and before that prisoner is transferred to the custody of the correctional facility. And so this language merely attempts
they get well
to define that by saying it's it's up until
we can license our jails as health care facilities.
Police cars. In a minute they put them in the jail, it's their responsibility.
Yeah, but they're going to be taxing them anyway.
Okay.
Well, it actually, it limits to the injuries occurring before that time, not just to that period of time. Then on line 29, where it says, insert not provided by the county, the purpose of that change is to clarify that the prisoner is not to be made liable for medical services provided by the jail infirmary or by the county, because it was the understanding that that was not the committee's intention, but that the services that are being described there are those which the county has to provide outside of its own facility, if it transports an inmate or brings in a specialist to deal with a problem. Then on page 3 of the amendments, line 12, this amendment is in response to a concern that the facility, the correctional facility, was being relieved of any liability for medical care for the inmate, regardless of whether it had caused the injury. And so in order to prevent that additional immunity, this basically says, except for tort claims actions or civil rights violations, the person is liable for his own medical cost and the facility is not liable. So that was to clarify that.
Yeah, I think that was basically part of Senator Hill's question in terms of why we are not wanting, it's clear we're not excusing of any liability.
Closing the door entirely. Right.
Yeah.
That's correct. And Madam Chair, other than that, these simply include the amendments which were acted upon by the committee at the last hearing.
Okay. Are there objections to the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1142? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. Okay, Senator Bunn, we've just finished adopting the dash 3 amendments to 1142, which we voted on, and we had a couple of conceptual amendments. Senator Ingrid has gone off, and we have them here before us, too. And we took the extra time. Senator Shoemaker.
Did these amendments add an emergency clause, and did that explain to us why, or is that just carried over?
Madam Chair, yes, an emergency clause was added at the time of the hearing, and it is included on page 4.
Oh, I see. It's just in dash 3 amendments. All right.
Right. The dash 3 amendments include all of the things that we included at the time we passed the bill out, and they also include the further iteration of our conceptual amendments so that you really can see for sure that we've tied up the knots that we requested, and we appreciate Ingrid's work. Paul?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. There was a concern raised since the amendments were adopted, and I just wanted to clarify that if an injury occurs, as it's defined here, even if the symptoms don't appear until after the person goes to the correctional facility, they'll still be covered by the account, because they're the injuries that are described here. If they occurred at the time of attempts to arrest or to take the individual into custody, for example, if someone gets a concussion, it's not discovered until after he gets into the correctional facility, then the account would pick it up because it occurred at the time of arrest.
Okay. Any other comments? This bill goes to Ways and Means?
Yes, it does, Madam Chair.
Okay. Chair would...
Madam Chair, then I'd move Senate Bill 1142 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Hill's moving Senate Bill 1142 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
No.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. I want to thank Ingrid and Paul for their work on this bill to clean it up. Okay.
It's an old-fashioned idea.
Let's move to the judges. Let's briefly call up Senate Bill 404. We have scheduled 404 as a work session, I guess. Are there? We have people who are here. Where did they go? Where's our staff? Well, let's step 404 away then.
Madam Chairman, I'm here on the David Moore's County 404.
Okay.
Mr. Taylor, they're back now. Trustee staff there.
Okay, Senate Bill 404.
Madam Chair, I have amendments to the bill.
Right, and it is our intention to explain what the amendments are today, and we'll certainly not pass them out. We have objections from the...
Does dash 4 take place in page 3? Ignore dash 3. Okay.
404 is being used. 404 is being used as vehicle at the request of some judges who've had difficulty with the Ethics Commission, and we have, you see in your file, a letter from the Ethics Commission in opposition to the dash, dash 3 amendments, and I'm not sure what they think about the dash 4 amendments, but they are not able to testify today. I just wanted to make sure that we have people who want to deal with this an opportunity to be heard today, and then committee will send them out to see if they can come to some resolution or see where we are with it a bit.
I note these letters refer to the dash 3 amendments.
Right. We're not considering anything except it's right here in front of us.
All right.
So, your name for the record, please.
Madam Chairman, Senators, I'm Judge Dorothy Baker from Multnomah County.